Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for hemp paste at republicbroadcasting.org and visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
Ladies and gentlemen, are we on the air? Are we going? A lot of trouble with my Skype here lately. Testing 1, 2, 1, 2. Okay. Didn't hear my theme music. Okay. All right. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, you are tuned in to the Red Pill Hardcore Radio Show. I am your host, V. And, well, we're having some problems here. obviously, I do apologize for you guys to not caught me live lately. Issues, I guess, with the station. Some technical issues, but I think we're getting that squared away. And there's some adjustments being made. I don't know. I don't know what all's going on. But I'm going to try to give you the same quality show. Anyhow. Yeah, so, what's going on in the world today? Yes, I need to say, I mean, it's getting a little wacky. All right, I'm getting very fed up with the, because I've got to keep an eye on these people. I know I know what you guys are thinking. For those of you who listen to the show, uh-oh, he's going to talk about Gab again. Yes, I'm going to talk about Gab again. You know, since we have our own social network here, tlbtalk.com, we got our own. But that means I got to keep an eye on what the other social networks are doing, of course. That way, I can study what's working and what's not working. And what's not working, you know, Tilly Talk is going to try to be neutral grounds, even though we have a conservative membership base. We want to keep it balanced and neutral as much as possible. I definitely don't want it turning into Gab. Because here we have, we've got shooters, okay? We've got shooters. It is absolutely ridiculous how people want to deal with how they want to have their own narratives on Gab. It's just blowing me away because I do a lot of my promotion there. I get, as much as I complain about Gab, I get a lot of support. People on Gab, I get a lot of support from the places that I can have more of a free speech, which is not Twitter, it's not Facebook, it's not mine, it's just not, you know, it's only like two or three networks that I can have free speech on, and one of them is my own. So I get a lot of support. A lot of people are recognizing my information, that sort of thing. But when it comes to these, everything is just being made into a racial issue, even if it's not. I cannot complain enough about the white supremacist cesspool that is on Gab. It is so terrible. It is awful. Just the having to talk, most of the time I just don't. I don't say anything. I don't try to interact with the idiots the majority of the time. It's just sometimes it gets to you. Sometimes you just gotta cuss somebody out. And so, for example, the narrative. If there is a black shooter, a mass shooter, all the white people, they come at this at two angles. They'll say, oh, yeah, so here we have a black shooter because all white supremacists are shooters or, you know, this is what's mostly talked about, but here we have a black shooter. I bet this won't stay on the headlines for very long. The liberals will try to cover this up as fast as possible, which that just doesn't happen. You know, the information stays up with everybody else for the most part. Now, I'll circle back around to the most part. But the other way they come at it is, yeah, so most of the shooters are whatever ethnic backgrounds, and it's just not true. This shooter, I'm pretty sure he'll be let out of jail. I'm pretty sure he won't be charged. You know, it's just, it's absolutely ridiculous. It's crickets. When there is a white shooter in the headlines, it's crickets. The only post that you see about shooters is a ton of white supremacists pointing out that it's not a white person. and they keep the stuff alive. I literally had to tell this one guy, I was like, no, there's so much as white supremacist apologist propaganda. No, none of the other raced shooters' stories are buried. They're not. In fact, they're showcased for a ridiculously exaggerated amount of time by said people who are in control of the corrupt system. You know? As much as you want to talk about the liberals, especially the so-called, you know, the white liberals, it's the white conservatives that have got this, they're hitching a ride on this victimhood train, and it is so cringe. Nobody's buying it. This hate against whites, hate against the cis white male. I'm sorry, I don't see it. People are just recognizing that you have privileges that it's disgusting. It is absolutely cringe. it's so cringe. For taking up victimhood when there's just no place for it. Yes, white privilege is on its way out the door. And people are, it's sort of like, I don't know, like the bank. It's like a bank system. Everybody's pulling out their cash because they know it's failing. And what I mean by that, for example, oh my goodness, I like to watch Leon Lush on YouTube. His brain worms. He'll show videos of these ridiculous people. Ridiculous. And something that he showcased on his last video, it was literally this fat white woman in a grocery store with her cart. I don't know, some guy bumps into her, and the guy's like Hispanic or Asian, something ethnic. She freaks the hell out. He hit me, he hit me. She then proceeds to try to run him over with her cart. She's too fat and slow to make contact. She runs after him, swinging her fist. He hit me, he hit me. And then, you know, there's people recording on their phone, and these white people are automatically repeating her, repeating what she's saying. Oh, he hit her, he hit her. People weren't even around when any contact was made. They were not around. But yet, white knighting this woman, and basically the whole store, everybody is grouping around this guy like they're going to lynch him. And this woman is still attacking him. It's technically called battery. When you're attacking someone, they have to defend themselves. She may not have been making a lot of contact, but that's battery. And this man is having to physically dodge assaults while she's complaining that she got hit. That is such entitlement. That is evidence of classism. It's one thing to say she got hit, but you think that you can ball up your fist and retaliate and still be the victim? I don't understand that at all. And she's trying to rally everybody around her because there's 13 cell phones out now. It's absolutely freaking ridiculous. There's 14 people with their cell phones out circling around her. And she's trying to recompose herself and get the tears going. Oh, he hit me. He hit me. She's so aggressive. And she's still trying to swing at the guy. anytime he gets close, because this guy is trying to figure out how's he going to check out with his food. So he's having to walk back and forth around her. And so, I mean, it's sickening. It's absolutely sickening. People not even seeing what happened, just repeating her. He hit her. And this poor guy is the actual victim in the scenario. That is some entitled classes. I'm so enraged by it, I almost cursed. That's why the woke is winning. Everybody say the woke is collapsing. I think that's garbage. The woke is winning because of people like her. She actually had a T-shirt on that says "Newt." What's that guy? Newt Gavin. It had this guy's name on it, and it said "F.U." on it. You know, this woman's obviously politically charged, and she's crying wolf out in public. I mean, what's the point of this? To keep white privilege alive or something? I don't get it. How dare this ethnically ambiguous person touch me? He must be punished. I think people are just terrified. Their white privilege is not going to be worth anything anymore. Like American Express card or something. And they're trying to buy any attention and any power they can get out of it before it's gone. I've seen so many things in my life. I've seen so many things in my life that literally make me sick to my stomach. But this, seeing this happen makes me just, I want to go all the way left. It makes me want to say, screw this. I'm going left wing now. I'm going to be Lucius left foot. 24/7. Seeing this kind of stuff is absolutely and you think to yourself, oh my gosh, and this is an adult doing this. This wasn't some 6-year-old child. This is playground activity. But adults in a grocery store. I mean, this is beyond Karen. I don't even want to classify this as Karen. This is beyond Karen. And I'm talking about this. It's an isolated incident. No, this stuff happens every day. Too many men have been sat in the back of police cars, especially ethnic men, behind some lying, whiny little, I'll just say Karen. It's got to stop. I do believe we're going to take a commercial break here. Guys, we'll be right back. That's my first rant for the day, but we'll be right back.
the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing, knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Lately I've been skeptical, silent when I refuse to speak. Distant from all around me, who witness me fail and become weak. Life is like overwhelming, heavy is the head that wears the crown. I'd love to be the one to disappoint you when I don't fall down. You don't understand when I'm attempting to explain.
Yes, yes, yes. All right. Yeah. So anyhow, there's a guy I deeply respect. I used to listen to him. Well, I think it's been like a decade now that I've been subscribed to his YouTube channel. Guy by the name of Dark Matter 2525. I do believe there's some people on this network that are aware of him. I know he's been spoken about by at least one or two of my callers. He has this thing where he takes religion and then he sets up logic and he runs these two scenarios side by side and tries to make you think about, you know, your faith and that sort of thing. He might be an atheist. I'm not sure. I can't say for sure. But I like the way he thinks. He's very thorough with his research. And he asked the question, you know, what is society collapsing? I know a lot of us think that. So I kind of want to dedicate the show to him and maybe get some different perspective, I should say. And because people are caught up in the fear, people caught up in what's going on in the world, and it's just overwhelming. It's overwhelming. But if you're able to step back and just take a look at stuff, I think you can put things into perspective and gain a healthy grasp back onto your reality. And if that isn't what this show is about, then I don't know what it is. So, without further ado, I think we can go ahead and play this without commercial breaks. It is an hour and a half long, but it's very gripping. It's very thought-provoking. A lot of data, a lot of questions asked and answered. I would like to talk with you guys about it later this week, see if you guys want to dig deeper than what he has gone into. So, guys, take your notes, and we'll talk about it later here in the future. Without further ado, let's go ahead and play Dark Matter 2525. Is society collapsing?
Is our society in the process of collapsing? Are things getting better or worse? One of the interesting things about that question is that there are a lot of people who agree that things are getting worse, but depending on their political outlook, they'll give you very different reasons for why things are getting worse or why society is collapsing. And usually those very different reasons will involve blaming each other. One side sees themselves as the cure and the other side as the cause. So in order to answer this question more objectively, we need to look at actual data to figure out what is really happening. Let's see if the narratives can withstand the scrutiny. So I came up with 8 questions, the answers to which I believe are good indicators for how society is doing, no matter your political beliefs. I tried to pick questions that can have quantifiable answers, but some of them are going to be more muddy than others. These are the questions. Are we dying less? Are we living longer? Are we more peaceful? Are we freer? Are we committing fewer crimes? Are we more prosperous? Are we more knowledgeable? And are we happier? You may think that you know the answers to these questions, but you might be surprised. So try to keep an open mind. First question, are we dying less? The worldwide data has shown that the death rate has dramatically declined since the 1950. The further back in time, the more difficult it is to extrapolate from the more limited records and evidence available to get exact numbers, but we know that the death rate generally used to be much higher in centuries past. At the turn of the 20th century, you had a 1 in 3 chance of dying of pneumonia, tuberculosis, or diarrhea. That was just a little over 100 years ago. Not all death rates are created equally, though, which is why the past is even worse than you think in this regard. That's because in the past, people were not living as long as they do today, which answers our second question. So not only were we dying more in the past, but it was younger people who were dying. Now, not only has the death rate gone down around the world, but the average age has gone up. What I think this means for the future is that we can expect the death rate to increase again, but simply because we're living longer and birth rates are dropping, so our populace will be composed of many more older people than there used to be, than there ever was. So they will be the ones driving the death rate rather than young people. That's why I said not all death rates are created equally. Normally, it's a bad thing if the death rate goes up, right? But it won't be a bad thing if the death rate goes up because it's driven by death due to old age. Now, as you can see, the projections out to the year 2100 show that life expectancy will continue to rise and the death rate will rise along with it as old age becomes the primary cause of death. Some people might say, of course, older people die at a much higher rate than younger people. But that's because they may take it for granted that young people get to survive now. That wasn't always the case. There were times when young people actually died at much higher rates. As recently as 1990, the child and infant death rate was twice as high as it is now. In the year 1900, 30.4% of all deaths were children under 5 years old. Before that, throughout much of the last two millennia, 50% of all deaths were children. Conversely, in the year 2020, about 5 million children under 5 years old died, which is 0.06% of the populace. So, in about 100 years, we went from 30% of all deaths being little children to only 2.9% of all deaths being little children. In the U.S., it's 0.6%. That is probably our greatest achievement as a species, and you hardly ever hear about it. At the turn of the 20th century, the child death rate dropped dramatically due to increased industrialization and modern medicine, specifically vaccination campaigns that eradicated common diseases and antibiotics that have saved a lot of people from deadly infections. That is extremely good news, unprecedented. Historically, we are extreme outliers. We get to live in this unique age in which we and our children are not dropping dead all around us. Consider this. The fertility rate used to be higher than 6 children per woman, which suggests that the population should have been tripling with every generation, yet the population grew very slowly prior to the 20th century. What does that tell you? From 10,000 BC all the way to the 1700s, the population only grew at a rate of 0.04% per year, even though the average was over 6 children per woman. That means children used to drop like flies. So which narratives got it wrong? Well, first, these facts run quite contrary to anti-modern medicine narratives. None of us were alive when dying of these terrible diseases was commonplace. So we can afford to scoff from a place of comfort, but that doesn't mean we can afford to be complacent. We don't have to think about a lot of problems that prior generations had to deal with, because those prior generations came up with the solutions that we take for granted. But disease is different, because disease evolves. So it's an ongoing problem that demands ongoing solutions. If we lose our respect for medicine and the science that brings us that medicine, then disease will have an opportunity to gain a foothold once again, and you might learn of the terrible grief your ancestors experienced. Another narrative that got it wrong was the religious narrative. So often we hear about how we're in decline now, and how God will punish us, or is punishing us, and how we failed our children because we're so godless and secular now. But look at the reality of our history. Back when everyone was deeply religious, back when everyone believed in God, 50% of all deaths were children. but now it's not even 3% worldwide. And it's not even 1% in our so-called godless, secular, hedonistic, crumbling society. And they're panicking. They think it's the end times, just like always. Imagine if, starting tomorrow, 50% of all deaths are children. We would think it's the apocalypse, but 1,000 years ago, it would just be an average day. The religious narrative is almost always a perfect inversion of reality. So, for the first two questions, I have to answer with a very well-established and easily quantifiable yes. But this will likely change if the average age continues to go up while the birth rates continue to decline. It could also change if diseases find a foothold once again due to lack of respect for modern medicine, but I suspect that problem would quickly correct itself after enough people pay the price for their ignorance. Are we more peaceful? This is the first question in which I wasn't really quite sure how to answer, so I let the research guide me. Now, as someone who is very much anti-war, I am concerned about all the war we've been seeing lately, especially war driven by my own country, the United States, which concerns me as a taxpayer, because I certainly don't want to be complicit in it. So, how are we really doing when it comes to war? Are things getting worse? Well, so far, the 21st century has been fraught with war, including the wars in Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, Yemen, Ukraine, and the global coalition against ISIS. Some people believe we're headed for World War III, and some even believe we're already in it. This is a serious consideration, especially seeing as how the world's major nuclear powers are once again engaged in a proxy war. But this question is not really about how things are, it's about how they're going. Are we more peaceful now? So to answer this question, we must look to the past. And the answer might not be what you think. And after I tell you these statistics on past wars, there's something really remarkable that I want you to consider. The deadliest war in terms of raw numbers happened in the mid-20th century, 80 years ago. It was World War II, with an estimated 80 million deaths. We cannot simply compare the number of people who died in past wars to present wars without considering the impact these wars had on the overall population. For instance, not only was World War II the deadliest war in terms of raw numbers who died, but it happened when the Earth's population was much smaller, at about 2.3 billion people, as opposed to the 8 billion who are alive now. So the war represented the deaths of 3.5% of all human beings at that time. Other wars have also had massive death tolls in the tens of millions back when the Earth's population was even smaller. For instance, the death toll of the Taiping Rebellion is estimated at between 20 to 30 million dead, with some estimates as high as 100 million. But if we go with 25 million, that was 2% of the Earth's population at that time. The Napoleonic Wars wiped out about 0.5% of the Earth's population. The 30 Years' War, which ended in 1648, wiped out about 1% of human beings. The Spanish conquest of South and Central America wiped out 7% of the Earth's population. There were about 500 million people in the 1550s, and the Spanish wiped out about 35 million of them. So in terms of percentage of the global population that died in war, the Spanish conquests were like two World War IIs. Around 35 million people were also killed during the Mongol invasions, but that was when there were only about 400 million people on Earth. So the Mongol invasions represent the killing of 8.75% of the global population of human beings, more than two World War IIs. The Crusades resulted in killing off about 1% of the population. About 40 million people died in the Three Kingdoms War between the 2nd and 3rd centuries. Since the Earth's population was about 200 million people back then, that war's death toll reduced the human population by 20%, or about 6 World War IIs. The Punic Wars were about 1.5 million deaths, which was about 1% of the Earth's population. These massive wars that wiped out 20%, 7%, 3%, etc., of the Earth's population were fought over many years, and the people who died were bludgeoned, impaled, or starved via resource denial. Between 1880 and 1920, some scholars estimate that India had 165 million excess deaths due to British colonialism, resulting in terrible famines. That represents 10.3% of the global population at that time, or 3 World War IIs. So, at first, I thought the 21st century looked pretty bad. But how does it compare to the rest of history? Well, let's add up all the major wars of the 21st century so far and combine their death tolls to see what percentage of the population is being killed in war this century. It's estimated that about 500,000 died in the Iraq War, 400,000 died in Yemen, 243,000 died in Afghanistan, 600,000 died in Syria. Current estimates for the Ukraine war are around 200,000, and they all add up to about 2 million people, which is 0.025% of the global population that died in those 5 major wars combined. And I realize that's no comfort to the unfortunate people living through those wars, but it's not meant to be. This is simply to find out if things used to be better or worse in terms of war. But to find out how peaceful we are, it's not just about the number of people killed. It's also about the number of people spared. And that cannot be understated. The remarkable thing I wanted you to consider is that we have the ability to do so much worse, and yet we don't. We possess weapons that people of the past could only dream of, and they wouldn't have hesitated to use them. Our power is godlike in comparison, yet our wars are far less deadly, which is very counterintuitive. You'd think it'd be the other way around, but it's not. The reality of the battlefield today is that you can be killed by someone who is thousands of miles away. You can be tracked from space. We have bombs now that are 10 times more powerful than all of the ordnance detonated in World War II combined. And there's no doubt that we could make them even more powerful. But what's the point? We can already kill everyone on Earth many times over. So, I am forced to answer that we are more peaceful because we have the ability to kill way more people than ever before, yet we kill way less than ever before. And there's no doubt that those two facts are very much related. So while the answer is yes, I have to add that it could very quickly change to no. Are we freer? This is a more difficult question that has much less of a quantifiable answer. Whether you're freer depends greatly on who you are and where you are. Sometimes it isn't even about the laws, but also the result of various circumstances. If you look at my country, the United States, you see that we have a whole culture that is based around valuing and preserving freedom. Sometimes it seems as though the word freedom is used more as a slogan than a real appreciation for what the word actually means. You'll notice a lot of the complaints today revolve around loss of freedom of speech, freedom of association, and freedom of religion. But the complicated truth of the matter is that sometimes those freedoms infringe upon each other. If one loses freedom because another gains it, should that be considered a gain or a loss? Since we're asking if things are getting better or worse, we must once again look to the past. So let's answer some rather simple questions. In the past, say 1950, could anybody post anything on social media at all? No, of course not. It didn't exist yet. The voice of the average citizen back then was limited to those within their physical proximity. The closest you could get to posting on social media back then would be to get some of your statements or questions published in a newspaper by writing a letter to the editor, and whether or not it got published was solely at their discretion. If you used vulgar language or they simply disagreed with you, they could decide to toss your letter in the trash and nobody would ever see your words. Now, anybody can instantaneously self-publish on any number of platforms and potentially be seen by millions of people around the world, as long as they obey the rules of the platform to which they must agree before having the privilege of publishing. Despite that, a lot of people think it's no longer adequate to just log off the internet and have the exact same freedom of speech they did in the 1950s when their speech was limited to those around them. Now, we see having access to the world's eyes and ears as necessary to having freedom of speech. In that regard, it was not actually freedom of speech that changed. It was our expectations. On the contrary, our ability to speak has not been lost. It's more powerful than ever before. Some people assert that you can't say certain things, or you'll lose your job. But that's precisely because our voices have more reach now. Regardless, you could always lose your job for saying the wrong things, even in the past. Now we have a name for it, cancel culture. But that culture always existed. It's true that you probably would not have lost your job in the 1950s if you used the N-word. But if you said things like, God doesn't exist, or Christianity is not true, or we should not segregate by race, or if you were gay or supported communism, the list goes on and on. You could very well lose your job back then or be ostracized from the community, which I personally witnessed happen to my grandfather in the 1980s. Some people might say, good, you should be able to say the N-word but not blaspheme. And you have every right to that opinion, but then you can't claim to be against cancel culture or that it's really about your ability to freely speak your mind. You have to be honest with yourself and say that you do support cancel culture and you do support speech limitations, but only when they silence those of whom you want to be silenced. The irony is that it's precisely because our speech can now reach so many more people that there could be a greater chance of being fired because of it. In the old days, when only a handful of people may have known you said something objectionable, the company you worked for may have never found out, or even care if they did because their customers weren't likely to find out either. That is no longer the case. Again, freedom of speech did not change. Freedom of reach did. And the broader consequences of that followed suit. So basically, we have greater expectations for the power of our speech to reach more people, but we also don't want the negative effects that come with that broader reach. This used to be a problem only experienced by celebrities and politicians, but now it can be experienced by literally anybody. Is that more freedom or less? It's complicated, isn't it? Some people say everyone is too sensitive now, too easily offended. Everything is woke, everything is politically correct, and you have to point it all out. So, once again, we must look to the past and see if we can find a lot of sensitive and easily offended people. And as it turns out, they're very easy to find, because such people have a tendency to make their voices heard. The following is an excerpt from Chapter 2 of the Jim Crow Guide, written by Stetson Kennedy in 1959. Quote, Florida, while the political witch hunt was at its peak, saw fit to insert into the state's non-communist loyalty oath, required of all public employees, including teachers, the questions, do you support the race segregation laws in this state? If not, why not? Even Negro teachers had to reply affirmatively or lose their jobs. Unquote. Sounds like they had quite a strict cancel culture back then, didn't they? The Jim Crow Guide also offered these 7 rules for black people to follow when talking to white people. Never assert or even intimate that a white person is lying. Never impute dishonorable intentions to a white person. Never suggest that a white person is from an inferior class. Never lay claim to or overly demonstrate superior knowledge or intelligence. Never curse a white person, never laugh derisively at a white person, and never comment upon the appearance of a white female. There were some serious eggshells people needed to walk on back then. If you think race relations have gotten worse, then it's likely you never had to follow rules like these. In the 1939 film Gone with the Wind, Clark Gable uttered the infamous line, "Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn." That was an extremely controversial line, despite the usage of the word damn in prior films. But a month and a half before the film's release, the Motion Picture Production Code passed an amendment that formally allowed the use of the words hell or damn in this way, quote, damn, hell, excepting when the use of said last two words shall be essential and required for portrayal in proper historical context of any scene or dialogue based upon historical fact or folklore, or for the presentation in proper literary context of a biblical or other religious quotation, or a quotation from a literary work, provided that no such use shall be permitted, which is intrinsically objectionable or offends good taste, unquote. Many other expressions and depictions, including other words considered profane, violence, drugs, and sex, were quite restricted. Maybe you think that was a good thing, but if you do, you probably should not complain about losing freedom of expression or being too easily offended. Why would such steps be necessary during a time without an abundance of very easily offended people? Are we freer to do what we want to do? Slavery technically was not abolished. It was relegated to prisoners. Now you might argue, don't prisoners have a debt to pay? Wouldn't it be good to put them to work for restitution for their crimes? But consider this. After the slaves were freed, not everyone was so willing to hire them, and they weren't allowed to own land. Because forced labor was still legal for prisoners, the objective was to make black people prisoners. That way, they could be slaves again. So, while it was difficult for them to find employment and illegal for them to own land, it was subsequently made illegal to be unemployed or homeless. Such crimes like vagrancy and loitering were used as a loophole to get free labor from black people once again after slavery. According to the Jim Crow Guide, quote, if you fall into one or more of the above categories, and particularly if in addition you are non-white, you might be charged with vagrancy almost anywhere in the USA, as laws of the various states are very similar. These are the above categories which describe the varieties of vagrants eligible to be arrested: rogues and vagabonds, idle or dissolute persons who go about begging, common gamblers, persons who use juggling or unlawful games or plays, common pipers and fiddlers, common drunkards, common nightwalkers, thieves, pilferers, traders in stolen property, lewd, wanton, and lascivious persons, keepers of gambling places, common railers and brawlers, persons who neglect their calling or employment, or are without reasonably continuous employment or regular income, and who have not sufficient property to sustain them, and misspend what they earn without providing for themselves with the support of their families. Persons wandering or strolling about from place to place without any lawful purpose or object. Habitual loafers, idle and disorderly persons, persons neglecting all lawful business and habitually spending their time by frequenting houses of ill fame, gambling houses, or tippling shops, persons able to work, but habitually living upon the earnings of their wives or minor children, and all able-bodied male persons over the age of 18 years who are without means of support and remain in idleness. Now, maybe you think making idleness illegal is a good thing, but if you do, you are not arguing in favor of freedom. If you are able to go outside and take a walk, then you might be more free than many of those who came before you. Unfortunately, it's not all sunshine and rainbows now, because many of us still cannot simply go outside and take a walk. Most of us think of slavery as part of a bygone era that has long since been abolished, but currently there are about 50 million slaves around the world today. Not including the 2 million prisoners in the United States who are still legally eligible for forced labor, there are approximately 400,000 slaves in the United States today. In 1790, there were approximately 700,000 slaves. So compared to 1790, the number of slaves in the United States has not even decreased by half. Just like slavery of the past, modern slaves in the United States are forced into domestic work and farm work. Some are forced into prostitution, and some are forced into marriages in states with no minimum age requirement or states that allow minors to marry under certain circumstances. But the question is, are we freer? Though there were 700,000 slaves in 1790, that number was about one-fifth of the entire population of the United States. By 1880, there were 6.5 million slaves in the United States. So while there are still slaves in the U.S., they used to be 18% of the population, but now they're about 0.1%. We are undeniably freer in that regard. But there is still room for improvement, and slavery remains a large problem for the rest of the world. Are we freer in our relationships? According to Ferris State University on Jim Crow, quote, sexual relations between blacks and whites would produce a mongrel race which would destroy America. Treating blacks as equals would encourage interracial sexual unions. Any activity which suggested social equality encouraged interracial sexual relations. If necessary, violence must be used to keep blacks at the bottom of the racial hierarchy. Unquote. The rules weren't only applied interracially because, as they go on to say, quote, blacks were not allowed to show public affection toward one another in public, especially kissing, because it offended whites, unquote. Now, as you can see, the lie about destroying America was always a popular one to fearmonger about. I often kiss my wife goodbye in public, and not only are people unoffended by that, but they often smile at us because they think it's sweet. It is legal now for a black couple to do the same, so in that regard, we are freer. It's legal for an interracial couple to do it. However, sometimes interracial couples still get harassed for it.
There's no